case number 75206. Excuse me. This is James Droege versus Two Star Towing and Zane Investigations, plus the individual defendants. And I was advised that Two Star and Zane want to split the time on the argument. Okay. All right, of course, we'll start with the Droege as the appellant. Yeah, Mr. Moynihan, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would.
You have an approximate amount?
5 minutes.
Okay. There's a lot to cover in this case.
There is. It's an interesting case.
All right. And the court might interrupt and direct to certain areas that we have more concerns about than another, since it's impossible to cover everything.
I hope the court does.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
So the sounds telling me to state my name for the record.
I'm sorry. I've introduced my colleagues, Judge Jerome Tao to my right and Judge Bonnie Bulla to my left. All right. So again, we welcome everyone this morning.
So Ross Moynihan for the appellants. And I think the first thing that's interesting in this overall interesting case is that we have two summary judgment hearings. One, I think, early in the case before the expert disclosures, and one towards the end of the case, I believe it was after the close of discovery. Essentially, the results of the first summary judgment hearing brought by the Zane Company and Crystal Romans was to dismiss all of the claims in the case, and that motion was denied by Judge Kephart. Then we went on with expert disclosures. We went on with the bulk of our discovery. The interesting thing is that the fundamental facts of the case did not change. In fact, if there's anything, more questions of fact came from this further discovery. But the fundamental issues in the case and the parties' positions did not change. And so when Shep and the Two Star Towing Company bring their motion, and Romans and Zane Investigations essentially refile their motion with some minor edits to it, some addition of additional facts, the court grants all the motions and dismisses all the claims. And so I think what's interesting initially is the fact that we have these inconsistent rulings from the court. And when you look at it, it just seems like it was just a different day when the court made the decision to dismiss all the claims in the case. And the order dismissing all the claims essentially says there's no questions of fact here, and the defendants are entitled to judgment as a matter of law. The second thing that's interesting about the case is that each one of these claims, including the negligence-based claims, and that would be the negligent training and supervision, what's been labeled as the negligent performance of an undertaking, concert of action, aiding and abetting, these are all claims based in negligence. And there are multiple questions of fact regarding these claims, the duty, whether the duty was breached by the defendants. And then ultimately we have these damages claims, which I think are pretty well established, and there are really no questions of fact as to damages.
Let me, if I could, jump you up to the question of breach of the peace. The privilege to enter property and retake collateral afforded by the statute doesn't apply if there's a breach of the peace. And what's interesting about this case is Nevada doesn't seem to have a clear definition of what that means, what the elements of that are. And if you look at other states, they actually employ different approaches. So what standard do you think should apply to when a breach of the peace occurs and when it doesn't?
Really interesting question, and the reason why the start of the breach, or the start of the brief, goes into the issue of trespass, privilege, notice, demand for return of the property is the very issue of, it goes to duty and breach, really, whether these defendants had a privilege to enter the property. Entry is number one, because what's interesting about this case is...
Well, if you don't have an entry, then there's no such thing as a... Well, I guess you could have a breach off the property, but that's unlikely to happen.
Well, correct, but there are two factors of this analysis. It's whether they properly entered the property, and then whether they properly conducted themselves while on the property. And what we have is a standard laid out by the expert in the case, who's a repossession expert, that says that when you are on the property, when a property owner comes out and tells you to leave the property, you are breaching the peace if you remain on the property. And there are questions of fact here as to whether both of the plaintiffs here, Mr. and Mrs. Droege, told these defendants to leave the property. The defendants, Crystal Romans testified in her deposition that she doesn't remember being initially told to leave the property, and when she acknowledges being told to leave the property, she walks off property. There's a question of fact as to whether Donald Shupp was told to leave the property. At deposition, he testified that he didn't hear Mr. Droege or Mrs. Droege saying, "You must leave the property." However, the arresting officer from the Nye County Sheriff's Department testified that Donald Shupp told her that he knew that he was told to leave the property, that he knew Mr. Droege had gone back into the home.
So, I mean, so you're saying here that if demanding that someone leave and someone not leaving is an element of breach of the peace, that there's a question of fact in this case, but is that always a required element? Even if you're not demanded to leave, you know, a repossessor can't burglarize a house to go get collateral, like kick in the door and do a home invasion. Is that always a necessary element of the legal test?
Whether there's a demand to leave. Well, what is not in dispute in this case, which is another interesting thing, Mr. Zane, Ms. Romans, Mr. Shupp, the experts in the case, all confirm and have all testified that once a repossessor is told to leave the property, they must down tools and leave the property. If they do not do that, it is a breach of the peace. That is something that is completely not in dispute in this case. What is in dispute in this case is when and if all of these defendants were told to leave the property.
Mr. Moynihan, do you believe that we should apply the second restatement to analyze whether or not a breach of the peace occurred in this case?
Yes.
Is there any other standard that you think we should consider when making that determination?
I think that all the law backs me up in my belief, but when you enter the property of another and there is under a privilege, because the argument is that they had a privilege to enter this property, and we dispute that. The reason we dispute it is because on a very basic level, the truck belonged to the son, and this was another person's property that the initial lender of the vehicle wasn't in privity with. So we dispute that they had the privilege to enter the property. But however, when you enter the property, let's say you do have a privilege, and you enter the property of another, it's a breach of the peace if you are in a position or you put the parties in a position where there is the danger of a conflict. And that's really the ultimate standard, I believe, should be applied, is if you enter the property of another under circumstances where a conflict could arise, and there are signs that a conflict is arising, that's a breach of the peace.
Do you believe that happened in this case?
Absolutely. And the facts completely back up that assertion, because what we have is the brief goes into the factual scenario of what happened here. Ms. Romans had been case in the the place out. She wanted this truck. She had driven by dozens of times when the truck was in the backyard and was inaccessible. She finally drove by when it was in the front, and she was determined to get the truck. And in fact, Mr. Shook was determined to get the truck. And they're trying to get the truck, even though the homeowners are outside. They are resisting the defendants being on the property, and they're consistently telling the defendants to leave, 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 and they don't leave. In fact, Ms. Romans testified that she went after they came out, and they went back inside the house to get the truck or the piece of the truck. She was telling the tow truck driver, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, we've got to get this. And so that is the situation that arose here. And it's backed up by the testimony of everybody and the opinions of the experts that when you come onto a property and you are being resisted, you must leave the property, and not to do so is a breach of the peace. And what is the result here? Well, the result is because they didn't leave, Mr. Droege got into the truck, and then there's the allegation that the truck tire made contact with Mr. Shook. The police are called, and then ultimately we've got this arrest, prosecution, criminal jury trial for battery with a deadly weapon, and then the jury verdict in favor of them.
Before you sit down, we've all been wondering if there's some reason that trespass is not one of the causes of action in this case.
Perhaps it definitely should be. But I think the trespass is incorporated in the duty element of the other causes of action, those negligence-based causes of action. They had the duty to conduct themselves as a reasonable repossessor in entering the property and, secondly, while on the property. So the very fact that they trespassed on the property is a breach of their duty to act as reasonable repossessors under the same or similar circumstances. And so all this is incorporated. Just like a negligence cause of action is incorporated into the causes of action for negligent training and negligent performance of an undertaking, aiding and abetting a concert of action, with those latter two, aiding and abetting a concert of action, you are undertaking a duty and you breach that duty and you're acting in aid and in concert of one another.
Well, the trespass at common law doesn't have a reasonableness element. So long as the entry is unprivileged, if I trespass on a property for 1 second, intruding for 1 inch, it doesn't matter whether it's reasonable or not. That's actually a trespass, so long as there's no privilege.
And that's a per se breach of these repossessors' duty when they, in entering and in staying on the property. Meaning, number one, they're trespassing, so it's per se breach of duty. And secondly, if you want to rely upon the negligence theory of the duty, they are acting unreasonably under the circumstances in both entering and while on the property.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Moynihan. You have a little over 3 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ms. Fauci.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elise Foshi on behalf of defendants and respondents Donald Shupp and Two Star Towing. I want to start out by addressing a few of the points that appellants made just briefly with regard to the breach of the peace and the trespass issue, because as respondents, both myself and Zane have clearly indicated in our briefs, trespass was not a cause of action alleged in plaintiff's complaint, nor is trespass an required element that plaintiffs need to establish in order to prove any of the claims that were in their complaint. Similarly, breach of the peace is also not a required element of any claim that plaintiffs set forth in their complaint. Further, breach of the peace is actually under Nevada Revised Statute 203.101. It's actually a criminal misdemeanor charge described as the willful and malicious disturbance of the peace or quiet by loud or unusual noises, tumultuous or offensive conduct, threatening, quarreling, challenging to fight, or fighting. In this case, as the record indicates, W. Farrell arrived at the scene. and she determined that a breach of the peace did not occur and did not issue a citation to Ms. Romans or Mr. Shupp based on the valid repossession order.
Are you suggesting we use the criminal statute to determine what breach of the peace means in this civil context?
That would be my suggestion if that were an issue to be considered in this case, which is the position of respondents that it's not, because trespass is not a claim. There's been no claim that the repossession was conducted unlawfully. It's simply not an issue in this case.
But isn't it the case that quite a bit of discovery was completed and those issues of trespass and wrongful repossession were clearly identified in the deposition transcripts and in much of the other discovery that was completed? So do the respondents not have a full understanding of what the appellant's causes of action were at this point?
No, we do have an understanding of what the causes of action were. Our position is that whether or not a breach of the peace occurred and the alleged factual disputes that plaintiffs have presented to the court, resolution of those factual disputes are immaterial to the determination of whether or not summary judgment was properly granted on the causes of action that were at issue in the complaint.
Don't most of the causes of action, though, arise out of the trespass and breach of the peace issues that are the foundation of the appellant's case?
I would argue that they do not. I think one of the main causes of action here is the malicious prosecution, which I would like to focus on because I believe that's central to the initial bringing of plaintiff's complaint. And really what plaintiffs and appellants are trying to establish is that my client, Mr. Shupp, is somehow responsible for the initiation of criminal proceedings, which set the criminal prosecution of Mr. Droege in motion, leading to the damages which he's alleged. And I think that the undisputed facts clearly show that Mr. Droege is not liable for the, or that Mr. Shupp, pardon me, is not liable for the initiation of those criminal proceedings because he communicated information he honestly believed to be true to Deputy Farrell, who then made an independent determination based not only on his statement but also the admissions of Mr. Droege himself that he knew Mr. Shupp was underneath the back of the vehicle at the time he got in the vehicle, started the vehicle, and began to maneuver it. She took those facts and made an independent determination that a crime had been committed and arrested him. Thereafter, the district attorney made an independent determination in the exercise of his discretion that there was probable cause for the criminal complaint to be filed and for the prosecution to continue without any direction, request, or pressure from Mr. Shupp. That, in our opinion, is where all the plaintiff's claims stem from. And if we don't have that initiation piece by Mr. Shupp, we don't have a causal connection for any of the damages alleged.
Do you think that the facts giving rise to the malicious prosecution claim support the position of the appellant that a breach of the peace situation did in fact occur in this case?
If a breach of the peace did occur in this case, under these facts, it's respondents' position that it's the actions of Mr. Droege, which he knowingly and voluntarily undertook to get in the car, maneuver the vehicle, while there was an individual underneath trying to rehook tow chains, that led to an altercation and a breach of the peace if one did occur. Without his voluntary and culpable conduct, it's an intervening factor in this chain of events, I don't think we have a breach of the peace. Ms. Romans and Mr. Shupp simply came onto the property. Mr. Shupp came onto the property at the direction of Ms. Romans, who had a valid repossession order. He was simply attempting to hook up his truck to the vehicle to take it off. He stayed on the driveway at all times. He did not enter the garage, the house, the backyard. He did not even communicate with the plaintiffs until at the end, after Mr. Droege had maneuvered the vehicle behind the fence, when he requested that his tow chains be removed.
Isn't there a factual dispute, though, on that point about the communication, and that your client and the other individual were asked to leave, and although they deny it, the Droeges say yes, they were asked to leave. So if that's the case, Mr. Moynihan's saying at that point, summary judgment can't be granted because a factual dispute exists, and once you're asked to leave and you don't leave, then by definition that he wants us to adopt, a breach of the peace has occurred.
By his definition, Mr. Shupp has testified that he did not hear anyone tell him to leave the property. He's busy trying to do his job.
Right. I know he contends that, but the other side says there was conversation. So isn't that a factual dispute that precludes summary judgment?
It's a factual dispute, but our position is it's not one that's material to precluding summary judgment on each and every cause of action the plaintiffs have asserted in this claim.
Okay. All right. Are you going to relinquish your time here? To your co-counsel?
Yes, I'll let.
All right. I know it's not much time. There's a lot to cover, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Mr.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jared Christensen for Zane Investigations and Crystal Romans. Just to touch on a couple points quickly. Trespass is a standalone cause of action. Plaintiff is not cited to any case law, authority, or whatnot that somehow trespass is assumed into the duty breach elements of a negligence claim. In addition, if we look at the undisputed facts of this case, and this is a case that went through 2 years of litigation, the record is well established. This isn't a premature motion. This was done at the end of the discovery. The facts, as we know it in regards to Crystal Romans, are as follows. Crystal Romans had a valid order from Chase Bank to come and repossess the vehicle. She came onto the property to check the VIN number. At some point after that point, the appellants came out of the house, confronted Ms. Romans, instructed her to leave the property. She left the property. Mr. Droege testified during deposition that she did not refuse. He escorted her off the property. That is the end of the factual allegations against Ms. Romans and Zane Investigations. Plaintiffs have testified that they did not suffer any physical harm that day. Ms. Romans did not touch them. She did not cause any physical injury.
Well,
that
goes to the question of what the elements are. I mean, the big dispute between her argument and his argument is there are clearly some facts are disputed, some facts are not disputed. The question is which facts are material, and that depends on what the legal definition of breach of the peace is. Does it require physical harm? Does it not require physical harm? Does it require someone asking you to leave the property, or does it not require that? Is that just incidental, you know, like with my home invasion? You're saying there's no physical harm, but is that a necessary element of the definition of breach of the peace?
Well, breach of the peace is not a claim that's been asserted here. It's not a civil claim that's adjudicated in a court of law. It is a criminal charge that comes when
it goes from privilege to enter the property. You're saying that she entered the property because she had a valid order from Chase, and at common law, her privilege to enter the property ceases when there's a breach of the peace.
Correct, and that's why we have the UCC, which is a statute which allows privilege for a debtor, an individual who has secured property, to go onto a property.
But it's not absolute. I can't enter a house, kill the occupants, and take
sure.
the car, right?
Sure.
So when does it stop?
So generally, a breach of the peace is an escalation. Is when you escalate a situation where there's a potential for violence. And if you look at jurisdictions across the country who have addressed breach of the peace, many even say that trespass is not a breach of the peace, just coming on the property. There has to be some escalation of violence or potential for violence that occurs in the interaction. And the plaintiff's claims in this case are all negligence-based. We're talking duty breach, and there's four elements. There's causation and there's damages. Plaintiff had admitted that based on Ms. Roman's actions, they weren't injured. There's no causation, there's no damages.
But isn't it correct that Ms. Romans, as the repossessing agent, had a non-delegable duty to ensure that the repossession occurred without a breach of the peace?
No, there's no case law or standard that says that she has a non-delegable duty to ensure that she cannot control what another individual is going to do. She can't control if the individual whose vehicle is being repossessed, if they come out of their house with a gun. She can't control any of those things. She has a duty to do her best to calm the situation, which she did. She got off the property as soon as she was told to do so.
So you don't believe Ms. Romans at that point had a duty to turn to Mr. Shoup and say, we need to leave now?
Well, Mr. Droge was escorting her off the property at that time. She had no opportunity to go over to where Mr. Shoup was towing the vehicle because Mr. Droge is escorting her off the property.
So we have, Nevada has adopted the UCC code, correct?
That's correct.
And in that code, it says that you can use self-help repossession, except you cannot do so if you breach the peace. Is that correct?
That is correct. But that is not an issue that's here today. The issue that we're dealing with are negligence claims, intrusion upon the seclusion of another. There's a whole host of claims that have nothing to do with either the breach of the peace or with trespassing. And those were not claims or anything that had ever been alleged by plaintiff in a pleading. Even though they had multiple years, they could have amended their complaint and chose not to do so. The claims that are here before us are negligent-based. There's a negligent training supervision. Is there anything, there's nothing in the record that indicates that the negligent training or supervision of Ms. Romans was the cause of any injury to plaintiff. They have to prove all four elements of a negligence case, and they can't prove the last two elements on any of these cases that they suffered injury or there was a direct cause of any direct action by Ms. Romans. And that's key in this case. So even if trespass is somehow assumed into the duty breach elements and they breach that duty, there's still two elements that plaintiffs have to prove. And they've admittedly said that they have not incurred any damages. There was no physical injury on the day of the incident. And any damages that they may have claimed stem from Mr. Droge's own personal actions in choosing to get the car keys, to get in the vehicle, and to prevent the repossession which resulted in his arrest. That is an intervening cause.
Do you believe that physical injury is necessary for all of the claims asserted by the appellants?
In regards to the intentional infliction and the negligent infliction of emotional distress, there's elements in that case that you have to show that generally, yes, in this case, there would need to be evidence of some sort of physical injury caused as a result of the emotional distress. We don't have that. There has to be some correlation. Because based on the fact that Ms. Romans was just standing on the property, didn't touch anyone, There's a sliding scale with emotional distress claims that the less severe the actions, you have to show that there is some sort of physical injury and an indication from that. And plaintiff's own medical doctor testified that he did not believe from this incident alone would cause emotional distress. That it was taken into account with the fact that Mr. Droge was arrested, that they had to go through a criminal trial, and that is what was the cause of the emotional distress. Even if you look at the elements of the two emotional distress claims, they can't prove those elements. You have to witness a close family member suffer an injury, you know, and suffer shock and severe emotional distress in that. And there's no evidence of that.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
So I think that how I perceive the direction of the court is going regarding breach of the peace is the right analysis. And the reason the reason why I led with the trespass and breach of the peace analysis is because the defendants have asserted as kind of an absolute defense to all of the claims. We had this order, or what they call an order, from a bank. And we have an absolute privilege to go on the property and get that truck. Well, that's not the case. It's not the case because they enter the property of another who's not in privity with the bank, and they must give notice and a demand for the return of the property. Otherwise, they're trespassing. Okay? Secondly, while they're on the property, if they're told to leave and they don't leave, or if the situation escalates, which it absolutely and totally did in this case, if they don't leave, they're breaching the peace. And so the reason why that analysis needs to be done is because what the defendants are saying is, well, we had the privilege to go on this property and take this truck.
Well, I mean, that analysis, I mean, you've heard the questions. You're kind of interested in that analysis because it's an interesting legal question. But that analysis would be a lot more germane if you actually had a trespass claim. Because as they keep pointing out, you're trying to wrap, what I gather you are saying is you're trying to wrap a trespass claim into a negligence claim by saying the trespass is, I guess, the standard of conduct that was breached. But then you introduce, by doing that, you introduce all these other elements, causation and all the kind of stuff that wouldn't exist in a trespass claim.
Well, the trespass claim is inherent within the negligence-based claims. And that is, they had the duty before they entered the property to give notice and a demand for the return of the collateral. Secondly, while on the property, and because they trespassed, they breached that duty. Secondly, they had the duty not to breach the peace while they're on the property. And they did. And they breached that duty by...
Well, one of the differences between a trespass and a tort claim is trespass is harm to the property, but a tort claim is harm to a person. So what's the injury from the trespass to the person, since you don't actually have a claim that rests in harm to the property?
And, you know, that's another interesting part in the case, which is the defendants have said, well, Shep and Romans, they didn't hit anybody or physically injure anybody, so where are your damages claims? And a misstatement by the defense is that Dr. Reutemann, when he gave his psychiatric opinion, said that there was definite emotional injury as a result of the actual incident that occurred on the property. The very fact that how the plaintiffs describe it as a pack of wolves entering the property and refusing to leave while on the property, and the emotional stress that they underwent while on the property was an injury-causing event in and of itself, separate from the ultimate prosecution and what that family went through while Mr. Droege was on trial for assault with a deadly weapon.
Any further? All right, thank you, Mr. Moynihan.
Thank you.
All right, good job by both sides. We really appreciate your comments today. It's extremely helpful. All right, we'll